Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a better place. I want to thank everyone so much for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the 3.1 million Seattle area and the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with over 100,000 listeners in over 60 countries. Today's shows will be really special because during the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll be interviewing a fascinating gentleman named Jim Mars. He's one of America's most famous journalists, and I really like Jim because he's got lots of integrity and he's honest. I love his books. He's written some amazing books on UFOs, aliens, and the John F. Kennedy assassination, and he'll also be one of my guest speakers at my Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington, here in the United States on March 10, 11, and 12, 2017. Speakers will be coming from all over the world, including Norway, Japan, the United States, of course, the United States, the United Kingdom, and Canada. And we have confirmed visitors coming in as well from Switzerland and Norway. To register, please visit our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. During our last conference in June of 2016, spacecraft from my friends in the Galactic Alliance appeared both during the day and night, and they have promised to reappear again and give us protection during the conference. For those of you who'd like to see an actual UFO, please come on down, and I'm sure that they'll be appearing again. During our second hour from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing another fascinating gentleman named Billy Fay Woodard. He's the former base commander of Area 51. And he and his family are also from the Hollow Earth. Billy will also be bringing in his father, Zora, from the Hollow Earth, and I guarantee his interview during the second hour will be truly out of this world. They will both be at guest speakers at my Galactic Wisdom Conference in Olympia, Washington, on March 10, 11, and 12. So if you'd like to meet them, please come by to the conference. I really appreciate everyone's support so much for this radio program because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. And for everyone who donates at least $25 today, I'd be happy to give them a good reading. My email is outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793, or toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. I also have a new spiritual mentoring program where I can teach people how to get in touch with spirits and loved ones on the other side. So please contact me if you're interested in that. I want to thank everyone especially for their donations and support, especially Faison and Shirley in Florida, Caroline in England, Angela and Beverly in Texas, Anita in Dublin, Ireland, Eli in Texas, Marco, wonderful Marco, my good friend in Helsinki, Finland, Judith in California, Emma Louise and Jan Eric in Norway, Marie and Allen in Camino Island, Robert, Julia, and Louise in Bellevue, Randy and Jessica in Mercer Island, Washington, Darren in Olympia, Corey in Kent, and especially I want to thank Rod Shastri in Toronto, Canada, Sig Sigby in Norway, David Lowe in Singapore, and everyone around the world who helped me raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. I also would like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including Crystal at the Crystal Voyage Bookstore in Tacoma and the wonderful Orion Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show, and any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience in more than 60 countries with more than 100,000 listeners for your goods and services. With that, I'd like to also thank my dear friend Carol for designing my website and providing wonderful support. My friends Michiko Hayashi, as well as Hiro Emoto and Mrs. Emoto of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, and my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful station manager, Eric, and my sales manager, Eric Creamer, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. Out of This World Television is also broadcasting three times a week now on Comcast Channel 22 here in Puget Sound on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. And there will be an additional 10 to 12 TV programs downloaded on YouTube this weekend. So if you're interested, like to see some new shows, please go to YouTube and either type in my name, Ted Marr, or Out of This World Television. You'll find them. There will be interviews as well with the wonderful Michiko Hayashi, the Emoto Peace Project, and something I think you really enjoy seeing. With that, I'd also like to ask everyone today to send lots of love and light to Michiko's mother, who suffered a stroke recently, because I know that your love and prayers will really help her. Both Michiko and I will be speaking at the Los Angeles Body, Mind, and Spirit Conference at the LAX Hilton next week. And Michiko will also be giving a wonderful presentation in Hollywood on Saturday, February 11th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. It'll be at the Apex Academy on 1309 North Wilton Place. The event is sponsored by the City and Mayor of Los Angeles, and I want to thank them so much for sponsoring this event. It's free, and also along with her will be internationally known speaker Mabel Katz. And it's a wonderful event, and I hope you can all come. She'll also be giving presentations at the Body Mind Expo at the LAX Hilton that weekend, and I will be giving a presentation as well at the LAX Hilton on Saturday, February 11th from 4 to 5 p.m., with messages from the Masters, cosmic messages from Professor Albert Einstein, President John F. Kennedy, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, Nostradamus, Mahatma Gandhi, Dr. Masaru Emoto, as well as the Galactic Alliance. The messages will be on humanity's beautiful, bright future. I want to thank everyone who came to my Galactic Wisdom Conference last June. We're having another conference on March 10, 11, and 12. And one of the reasons I brought Jim Mars on today is because he'll be one of my speakers there. I want to also tell you that Canadian Defense Minister Paul Hellyer will also be giving a presentation, as well as Dr. Yoshi, who is considered Japan's most famous Hado therapist, and Michiko Hayashi of the Emoto Peace Project. I know that Paul is a wonderful man. He's got a lot of integrity and a lot of honesty. He was recently in Vancouver, British Columbia, and over 2,000 people came to his presentation. So I know he's a wonderful man, and I know that you won't want to miss his presentation. With that, I'd like to go to my good friend Jim Mars and bring Jim on today for his interview. Jim, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing just pretty tolerable, actually.
Oh, that's good.
I'm just tolerating everything, but that's good. That's good. I'm all right.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
The sun's come out. It's warmed up a little bit in Texas, so, things are looking rosy.
Well, I have to tell you that it's a cloudy, rainy day here in Seattle, Jim, but inside the studio, all this beautiful white light just came into the studio, and I think my angels are welcoming you to the program.
Well,
so
thank you. Thank you, angels. I need all the help I can get.
You have a fascinating background, Jim, and one of the things I like about you is your honesty and integrity. You tell it like it is. You're not afraid to tell the truth. You've written a whole bunch of fascinating books, and I could easily sit here for the next hour and just tell everyone about your books, but then we wouldn't be able to get to your interview.
That's true. And you know what? I keep no matter how much I get ahead, I keep falling behind.
Oh.
And what I mean is mm-hmm. that back in the late 60s and early 70s, when I started my course at the University of Texas at Arlington mm-hmm. on the Kennedy assassination, I was telling everybody there was a big conspiracy. It was a coup
sure.
in this country. And
sure.
they said, oh, you're a nut, you know. Well, you know, today the polls show most people now understand and agree with me. So
oh,
they
yeah.
caught up. But the problem is, by then I was off to something else. I was telling everybody, UFOs are real, you know, but we need to figure out who's in there. And
right.
They're going, oh, you're a nut,
right.
you know, but
right.
now everybody's kind of caught up.
Right.
And then I was trying to tell them, yeah, and they've been here forever and ever, because you go back, you find out that, you know, we may very well have been manipulated at the DNA level by extraterrestrials, you know, and these ancient astronauts. That
mm-hmm.
came here and brought civilization and language and all kinds of things, and everybody went, oh, you're a nut.
Yeah.
And now, since the History Channel came out with ancient aliens and have been showing all the artifacts and all the evidence around the world that supports that, then more and more people are at least paying attention to that. And but see, meanwhile, I'm on to something else, so I guess I'll just always be the nut.
Well, that's fine, Jim. You know, I've selected a clip I want to start off your interview with, and I'm sure you know about it, Jim, about John F. Kennedy's Secret Society's speech. I've selected about two minutes of the clip because you've written about secret societies, and I want to play that, if that's okay. I know I didn't give my wonderful manager and producer Eric much notice. I think I gave him about 60 seconds notice, but
that's more than I usually get.
He's smiling now, but he's a wonderful manager and a producer. So if you could play that for me, Eric, about the first couple of minutes. Thanks.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. But I do ask...
Isn't that an amazing quote? President Kennedy
made... There you go.
Yeah.
He knew. He knew. And look what's happened since then.
Oh,
terrorism, 9/11, oh, be afraid, oh, be, you know, cave in. We've got to build more national security. We have surrounded ourselves now with almost a police state in the name of national security.
That's true. That's true. And look what, for example, is happening back at Standing Rock in North Dakota, all the violence back there, people peacefully protesting against that oil pipeline.
Well, what about LaVoie Finnegan, you know, who tried to stand up for ranchers' rights, and he was murdered by the U.S. government.
Oh, that's right. Of course. Of course.
We don't hear about that.
Now,
you let some thug in St. Louis, be shot by a policeman, and you're going to hear that for weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, but
right.
You don't hear about the other side of the coin.
No. No, you sure don't. You sure don't, Jim. It's such a pity that President Kennedy was assassinated, but, you know, I've been in contact with him now for the past 2 or 3 years, and getting a lot of messages from him, and he tells me that our future is very bright, and the tide has turned against this secrecy.
Well, I hope so, and it certainly has the looks of that. So we're just going to have to keep our fingers crossed and keep watching watching all these people with very closely, and
mm-hmm.
Because talk is cheap.
Right.
What you have to do is you have to watch what people do.
Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated here, kind of a slightly different thing here.
Sure.
I read a little story where, you know, the Voyager 2, which we launched in, I think, 1977,
mm-hmm.
is now out beyond the solar system. So it's out in interstellar space.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we can't read the language. It's broadcasting. It's still operating, but it's broadcasting back in a language that the scientists can't read.
You're kidding.
And it's like somebody, one of the project managers said, it's almost like somebody's hacked the onboard computer. You know, it must have been the Russians, I guess.
Yeah, they did it.
The Russians did
it. Yeah.
But no, because they're saying at one point a zero got changed to a one, and it's thrown the whole thing off. It's like somebody flipped it. And although they do say that it's possible that, like, some cosmic rays or something like that, you know, there possibly could be some natural explanation, but the most straightforward explanation is that somebody hacked the computer and changed it. Well, it's not us. So
mm-hmm.
who's out there hacking our computers?
Maybe.
And I just found that very strange. That actually happened last year, but it's just now getting reported on. Also, and of course, Voyager 2 has always interested me because that's a piece of man-made material that is the farthest from this planet that anybody's ever gone. Like I said, it's already outside the solar system, and on board is a golden tablet. And on the tablet is inscribed, there's a drawing of a male, female, and a male and a female human.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And also kind of a diagram of where you can find the Earth. in relation to the solar system. So it's almost like a little map, you know, to get back home here. And what I actually find really fascinating is that this golden record actually can be played, and I think it's in binary code or something that they think somebody should be able to figure out. And you can actually play it and hear sounds from the Earth. Well, in addition to native drums and things like that, of course, they've got some of the famous composers are on there, Beethoven and Bach.
Mm-hmm.
But what I find interesting is also here outside our solar system now is a recording of Johnny B. Good by Chuck Berry.
Oh, how funny.
So I don't know, Ted, what do you think some advanced civilization is going to think when they pick this thing up, decode it, and hear Chuck Berry singing way down at Louisiana next to Orleans?
I think they've...
Are they going to think we're nuts, or are they going to think, hey, these guys are cool?
They think they'll all think that we're you and I, that they're all like us, Jim, we're all nuts, and that's why they switched the languages on us. I'm sure that they've done that, actually.
Yeah.
Because logically, how else could that happen except somebody's fiddling with it out there?
Exactly. And, of course, that's not the last thing either. They mess with stuff leaving the Earth, too.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the Titan IV blew up at 100,000 feet, and the project manager said that they felt like something had come dropped down from space and hit it. And then, of course, you've got the SpaceX thing. That thing blew up here a few months ago,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to get it up there. And it's kind of interesting that they put up satellites, communication satellites all the time, and nothing seems to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're doing something that means we're actually going to cut loose from the Earth, or that maybe they're putting some stuff in space, like maybe atomic weapons, you know, those things seem to get stopped. You know, they
sure.
disappear, or they blow up high in the atmosphere. It's enough to make you wonder, you know, who's out there and what are they up to?
I'm
still fired up here because, you know, one of my favorite science fiction books was Battlefield Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And
great book.
And they've just re-released it in a audio
uh-huh.
book, which, by the way, Audiophile Magazine says it's the best audio book of 2016.
Wonderful.
Which is quite something. And I can see why. It's 47 and a half hours long, for one thing, if you believe that. So they didn't miss anything on the book.
Uh-huh.
And it's got 67 voice actors playing the role of the characters in the book. And then over 150,000 sound effects. You know, when they shoot, they didn't just go pow, pow. It goes,
oh,
I don't know.
Gosh.
They got all kinds of sound effects. And a musical score that was written especially for this book. Now, it's really incredible. I hate to date myself, Ted, but I remember as a kid lying in bed at night listening to the radio, you know.
Sure.
And I listened to The Shadow and Amos and Andy and, I don't know, all of those radio shows.
Sure.
And it was so cool because you'd lay there and you could hear the voices of the actors saying what was happening. You could hear the sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
But you built the picture
right.
in your mind.
Right.
You know? It was a very mutual experience with getting the audio and then building up the video in your mind, unlike today with TV and computers where it flows in on you, it just hits you, you know. And if they say, here comes the monster, you don't have to worry about what the monster looks like because it looks like whatever they present to you. But, you know, when it's in your mind, you can build up all kinds of things. And I think it's a great opportunity for younger people who maybe missed out on that experience of listening to a book and listening to it with voices and sound effects. And you get to build the picture in your own mind. So that's battlefieldearth.com. You know, go to battlefieldearth.com and you see about that audio book and see about getting a copy of the book. It's really good because it's kind of like what's going on right now, Ted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this takes place 3,000 years in the future in the aliens have already conquered the Earth for 1,000 years, and it's all about how the humans regain their sovereignty and their control, which is always a good lesson to learn. But also the fact is that in this account, the intergalactic bankers have loaned money to the Intergalactic Mining Corporation, and they've gotten a contract to mine the mineral resources of the earth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they're on a timetable. They have to finish at a certain date or they lose the contract. And if they lose the contract, then the ownership of the earth goes back to the intergalactic bankers, and they'll sell it to the highest bidder. So they're really on the hook to try to get all their work done. In the meantime, they're having to put up with these pesky humans. You know,
so
it's really interesting how all that works out, and just that book goes just every which way and talks about a lot of things and makes it quite relevant to what's happening today. So I'd really encourage you to try that. I don't know if you've heard that, but you should.
Well, thank you, Jim. No, actually, I've got a copy of your book next to my bedside, and I do read it. It's a huge book, and it's so interesting. And I urge everyone to please check out Jim's new book. I wanted to ask you, Jim, you know, you've written so many fascinating books. Here's one here I want to bring up. Is our occulted history, do the global elite conceal ancient aliens? And like you said, I think ETs have been around this planet for many, many thousands of years. But many people just don't realize that they're out there. And
that's true. Well, they just turned a blind eye. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear about that, you know.
Sure.
And if you shut down your mind and your eyes and your ears and you don't read anything, don't listen to anybody, and don't really stop and think deeply about things, well, then you don't have to worry about that.
Right, right, right. Well, you've written some incredible books. You know, I'm in contact with my friends from the Galactic Alliance, and I often see their spacecraft at night. Actually, they have a five-star. It's like a five-pointed system, Jim, with a large white light in the middle there, and I can usually see them at night. But if you look up, you can always see something moving up in the skies.
Oh, yeah, always. There's all kinds of stuff moving around up there. Some of it's probably ours, but a lot of it's not.
Sure, sure, sure. I wanted to ask you, Jim, with your background...
Let me ask you something real quick. You said a minute ago that you've been in touch with John F. Kennedy. I'm assuming that metaphorically or spiritually, right?
Psychically, I have, yeah. And he's very proud of you, too.
I was going to ask, what does he think about all these people that are chasing around trying to solve his murder?
Well,
does he think we're wasting our time, or is he gratified that somebody's trying to, you know, look into what happened to him?
Well, he says that the truth is coming out, and your book really helped a lot about that, because you, of course, wrote a book about that as well.
Right.
And everybody knows. I mean, he said that, you know, there were several different shooters who actually had a triangulation shot on Dealey Plaza who murdered him. Oswald was, like Oswald said, he was a patsy.
Right.
And one of the things he directed me to recently was the story in Christchurch, New Zealand, of the newspaper there that had published all the details about Oswald. It was released from the U.S. Embassy one day before President Kennedy was murdered back
That's
in 1963.
And you know, there was a few slip-ups. That's like National Security Action Memorandum 273, which was signed by Lyndon Johnson on the Monday following the Friday assassination, which countermanded Kennedy's orders to begin pulling out troops from Vietnam and kept them there. Plus, it ordered up new studies to expand the war into Laos, Cambodia, and all the time with deniability, with, you know, that they could have deniability of the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And what's interesting is that... Action memorandum, although it was signed on Monday following the assassination, we got from the Johnson Library a draft of 273, which was actually written on Thursday, the day before Kennedy was killed.
Oh, my goodness.
So, see, they were taking steps to completely reverse Kennedy's policies even before he was killed.
Right. Right, right. That's amazing. That's amazing. One of the pictures I remember seeing actually after the assassination was Lady Bird Johnson, of course, who was the wife of Lyndon Baines Johnson, getting aboard Air Force One going back to Washington D.C., and she had this huge smile on her face, and she was laughing and giddy, and she was anything but sad about President Kennedy's murder.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
And that's why when you get right down to it. The two people who actually could be tried and convicted in a courtroom than the death of President John F. Kennedy or his successor, Lyndon Johnson, and his next-door neighbor and old buddy, J. Edgar Hoover, who was head of the FBI at that time and directed the non-investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the reason I say that, could I go into court and prove that those two men ordered or orchestrated the assassination? No, I cannot. But what I could prove beyond any reasonable shadow of a doubt, as they say in the legal world, is that both those men took actions after the assassination to block or disrupt or prevent any meaningful investigation. Well, under the law, that makes them accessories after the fact.
Right.
And under the law, they are considered just as guilty as the person who pulled the trigger. So I, for some time, have tended to lose interest in who it was that was actually firing from the grassy knoll or from other locations on Kennedy, because the fact is that the murder was aided and abetted by Johnson and Hoover after the fact, and they could be found guilty. And in fact, in Texas, we've actually executed people who, the facts of the case show, they didn't kill anybody, but they were an accessory to the crime.
Sure, absolutely. You know, I have to tell you, Jim, you probably know about this history, but I researched recently a little bit about the history of Lyndon Baines Johnson after the assassination. And after he...
kind of fell apart, didn't he?
Yeah, he went nuts. He fell apart, and I believe he passed away in 72. Was he in and out of mental institutions? I can't remember now, but I know...
I think they brought in a psychologist or a psychiatrist to examine him, but that was all kind of hushed-hushed because, you know, you don't want to tell the American people that there may be something wrong with their president.
well, you know, he ended up paying
That's
for
not good public relations.
No, no, but it's real quiet about his history afterwards. And I had an astrologist on my show a couple years ago, Jim, about 3 years ago, and she said that this was a time of truth. From 2014 through the rest of this decade into the 2020s and 2030s, that more and more truth would be coming out about all kinds of things.
Well, that's why I keep telling people we are actually already in the apocalypse, okay? Because the apocalypse is a Greek word, and it means the unveiling or the revealing. You know, truth will out, and it's beginning to happen right now, isn't it? And it's beginning to have an effect on all of us, on the whole society, as evidenced by this past election. You know, all the pundits and the experts and the hired people and the and the lobbyists and their news media psychopaths, you know, they all just said, oh, well, you know, we got it. Hillary's got it. Come on. Hardly even worth going to the voting booth.
Right.
And yet they turned it around. People said, no, we, in fact, I don't even call it an election. I think what we just recently saw was a referendum, a referendum on the New World Order, you know, or do we want to continue to go down that path of socialist globalization, you know, or do we want to try something different? And I think the bulk of the public says we're ready for something different.
Sure. Jim, I want to ask you, with all your wonderful writing and experience, what do you see happening this year?
God knows. It's going to be real interesting. Hang on to your hat, because I think that there's just no telling what's going to be happening. And what I think it's all going to depend on is whether or not Trump can, number one, live, number two, advance any of the programs that he's trying to. I mean, he said he was going to drain the swamp.
He said
he was going to clean house.
Yeah.
And there's already looks like things are happening, okay? And, of course, a lot of people don't like it. A lot of people really like it. But I say let's just wait and see how things shake up. So far, his administration, which is, you know, barely a month old, he really hadn't had time to do that much. And I think we need to just bide our time and wait another few months to find out these people that are putting in these positions, what are they doing? Are they doing things that's going to be beneficial to the country, or are they harming the country?
Right.
And then we need to just really keep watch on that. And then by, I don't know, April, May, something like that, we might be able to look back and go, okay, I think he's really changing things for the better.
Sure.
Or I think he's changing things for the worse.
Sure.
And then we can make decisions on whether we want to get out and protest or whether we want to go along with the program. these people who say, well, I didn't like the way the election went, and I'm crying, and I'm going to burn down the grocery store. What? They're a bunch of idiots, man. Yeah. Come on, just sit tight. Watch what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Find out if it's really worth griping about. You know, one of the first things he's done that they're howling about is because he said of these seven countries, you know what, several hundred countries in the world, and only seven, he's saying, we want to be careful about these guys because we want to make sure they're bringing in terrorists. You know, so we want to vet the people coming through here.
Sure.
You know, and everybody's just raising Cain about that. Well, wait a minute. That was the same thing Obama proposed.
Mm-hmm.
All he's doing is doing what Obama said he was going to do.
Sure.
So what's the problem?
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
They're idiots. What can I say?
Well, I want to backtrack a little bit, Jim, because you know there's lots of different ways we could go today, but there is a book. You've written so many interesting books, Jim. There's one book called The Terror Conspiracy Revisited, What Really Happened on 9/11 and Why We're Still Paying the Price.
Right.
And the information that's come out since that time that it was a complete setup job, and much of it was run by people like Dick Cheney, and people have also implicated former President Bush as well for his role in a huge false flag event.
Right. That's exactly right. That's
mm-hmm.
exactly what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Almost nothing that we were told about 9/11, and that most people believe. In other words, the 19 hijackers, you know, the box cutters, the fact that they could fly airplanes like pros. You know, nothing we've been told has turned out to be really truthful. The whole thing is just, and yet it put us on the path to a police state, right?
Right. That's true. That's very, very true. I had Courtney Brown on my show from the Far Side Institute in Atlanta, Georgia last year a couple of times. Fascinating man, Jim. And one of the things he did, he said he engaged two different remote viewers to remote view 9/11, and he said it was a complete setup job going all the way back to Vice President Cheney's office.
Yeah.
I
think that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the thing is, they had access to technology, secret technology, that the public was not aware of.
All right.
So they were able to pull this whole thing off and then give us this cockamamie story about the 19 hijackers.
Right.
And
right.
nobody was in a position to counter it. And what I'm talking about here is that I was already aware of this. Back in the 80s, I interviewed an airline pilot. And at the end of the interview, we were just talking, jawboning.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, my job's redundant. And I said, well, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, the computer flies the airplane. He said, I'm just there in case the computer breaks.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay. So, see, I knew that in the wide-body jets, they were already basically run by computer.
Right.
Okay, now the computer, see, believe it or not, is sensitive to outside interference. You can't, it's kind of like, and it's a bad analogy, but let's say with CB radio.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking on CB radio and I have a stronger signal than yours, you're going to hear me, not people that you're calling are going to hear me and not you.
Right.
Because you have stepped on that signal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can do the same thing basically with an airliner.
Mm-hmm.
If they have the frequency, they can go in on that frequency, override it, and take external control of the in-flight computer and fly the airplane. We all know this because we know that there's guys sitting at desk in Fort Huachuca, Arizona, and bombing villages in Afghanistan with those drone airplanes, right?
Drone
aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we know today. We know about all this remote controlled aircraft.
Right.
But see, we didn't really know that on 2001.
Right.
And so when they said all these four airplanes crashed into whatever, and we're going, yeah, okay, because we didn't know that they could capture the onboard computers and fly those planes anywhere they wanted them to go.
Courtney Brown has confirmed what you just said, Jim, last year, because he said that there was a secret rogue military outfit, I think it was based in Virginia, who actually controlled all the planes and flew them into the Twin Towers, for example.
Yeah.
Because the people wondered, because the way that the aircraft, they flew so skillfully through New York City.
Well, and not only that, but according to veteran pilots who like Russ Wittenberg, who had actually even flown some of those same aircraft, okay, that were used on 9/11.
Right.
He said they exceeded their design limitations, which you can't do unless you are in manual override.
I see. Interesting. And then there was the story about, what was it, what, not the Twin Towers, but building number 11, did you see that famous clip where there was a BBC reporter, and she's making a broadcast, Jim, of the so-called terror attacks, and then
she says the Solomon Brothers building, which was building 11, says has collapsed, and yet she's doing this live from New York,
right?
And out the window behind her is still standing there.
It's still standing.
She was off about 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
She got off the got off the script.
Wow. That's
so see, it's just like, and the same thing for the Pentagon. Everybody thinks, well, plane hit Pentagon and all those poor people killed and blah blah blah.
Right.
Hey, go, you know, everybody seems, and when you take a picture, when you think of the Pentagon on 9/11, you think of that big V-shaped gash in the side of the West Wall, which is what they kept showing everybody forever, days, weeks, months.
Okay, but
now here's the thing. The wall didn't collapse, but from about an hour after whatever hit the Pentagon,
Wow.
And I have photographs of the original hole before the wall collapsed, and it's a small little hole at the very ground level. I mean, it's about 10 foot high, one story high, and it's about 20 feet wide.
Wow.
Okay, now, wait a minute. How do you get an aircraft with a 125-foot wingspan and a 40-foot high tail into a little bitty hole 20 by 10?
Right.
You don't.
Right.
Okay,
right.
And so the whole thing's just, and besides that, you know, there were like 82 surveillance cameras on and around the Pentagon on that day, and the FBI ran around and confiscated all of them, and we've never been shown any of that except for 11 seconds, which actually doesn't even show anything except for fire and explosion. Doesn't show an aircraft.
Courtney, his remote viewers verified what you just said, Jim. They said that his remote viewers saw a rogue missile being fired by a rogue U.S. Navy submarine off the coast of Virginia that hit the Pentagon, and the real plane ended up out in the Atlantic somewhere. I don't know what happened to the passengers, but the plane never...
Well, there's a good chance, if you go back and study the Northwoods documents, and these were some documents drawn up and approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 1962, and they were going to set off bombs in American cities like Miami and Dallas and New Orleans. They were going to assassinate certain citizens. They were going to hijack planes. They were going to sink ships, and they were going to blame it all on Castro.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and this was approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It was only stopped by President Kennedy, who said, wait a minute, we don't play that way. You know, wouldn't that make us no better than our enemies?
Right.
And so he put a stop to it and then ordered all the copies of Northwoods destroyed, except, of course, typically in some government file somewhere, somebody overlooked a copy, and then when the House Select Committee on Assassinations, which was created by Congress for the express purpose of looking into what happened to John F. Kennedy. Ironically enough, they came up with the Operation Northwoods document.
Amazing.
And I think that they pulled off something very, very similar to their Northwood plans on 9/11.
I think you're right. Jim, I have to ask you, too. You wrote, among your many books, excellent books, and I urge everyone to look up Jim's books on the web, you wrote another book called PSI Spies: The True Story of America's Psychic Warfare, and that's a fascinating book, Jim, where you talk about how at one time, and I think we're still doing it now, we actually employed psychics to help us help our military and intelligence agencies.
Yeah, when I stumbled across that, I thought, well, this is a win-win situation. I said, because this is a hell of a story.
Sure.
I said, it's either true or it's not true. If it's not true, and they're spending taxpayer money experimenting with psychic ability, who we've all been told doesn't, you know, is non-existent.
Right.
Well, then, you know, what a waste of the taxpayers' money. But if it turns out that it's true, and by the way, it did, then whoa, this means this is like an evolutionary leap for humankind. You know, that proving that we all have psychic ability and that we can do things beyond our normal senses.
Right, right. Well, you know, I'm sure you know Ed Dames, and he was on my show here a couple of years ago, and I think he was part of that program. But I've been told, I've heard, and I've read, Jim, that they shut the program down back in the 90s. But I just suspect, I think it's still going on in some shape or form.
Well, what they've done is that, you know, back in 95, they shut down the Army's unit, their remote viewing unit that was codenamed various things, Sunstreak, mm-hmm. Grill Flame, mm-hmm. You know, Stargate. Mm-hmm. And they, yeah, that's true. See, so if you, this is so that if Baptist fundamentalists ask the Pentagon, are you paying people to be psychic warriors? They can say, no, we're right. not, and we don't have any such unit anymore.
Right.
Well, technically, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
But what they've done is that instead of grouping all the remote viewers together mm-hmm. and forming some sort of unit, they have taken all the good remote viewers and embedded them in various other agencies and groups and organizations, such as you know, the Navy SEALs mm-hmm. and the Army Rangers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, think about it, Ted. If you were an Army commander, wouldn't you want to have somebody near at hand who just might be able to tell you what's on the other side of the hill?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And I just suspect, it's just a suspicion of mine, Jim, but I'm sure that the Russians and the Chinese have active psychic programs too,
oh,
intelligence
sure.
programs.
Yeah. Well, they're the ones who got the ball rolling in the first place.
Right.
Nobody in the Pentagon wanted to mess with psychic ability.
Mm-hmm.
They were, well, they would say they were forced into it. Their hand was forced because the Russians mm-hmm. were doing a lot of study and making headway
right.
in psychic discoveries. In fact, I'll tell you something. It's my secret belief that mm-hmm. the collapse of the Cold War was, I think, largely due to the development of remote viewing. Because that was done in a response to the Russians, who had what they called extra sensors, and they would go out psychically and they would look, and so we began to develop that same process, and we found out it was workable, and so we had this Army unit mm-hmm. that was going out and using their psychic ability. Well, the whole Cold War was built on secrecy.
Uh-huh. That's
you know,
true.
We didn't know what the Russians had. We didn't weren't even sure what their objectives were, and they didn't know what ours were, and they didn't know what we had. When then
right.
both sides developed this sense, this psychic ability, they're able to go into locked cabinets and then underground laboratories and go everywhere
exactly.
with their mind, and there's no more secrecy.
Right.
So the Cold War shut down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Fascinating. You know, one thing I like about you, Jim, is that not only do you have a lot of integrity and a lot of honesty, but you always seem to be one step ahead of the curve. And I mentioned that because there is another book that she wrote years ago called The Rise of the Fourth Reich,
mm-hmm.
and about secret societies here in the United States. And, of course, after World War II, the U.S. government brought over up to 10,000 Nazis, and those Nazis actually established NASA as well as our CIA.
Right.
And since that time, there's been revelations through Corey Good and Randy Kramer from the Secret Space Program that there's a whole branch of the military industrial complex, Jim, which is involved with a breakaway group of Nazis off planet, and this book that she wrote several years ago about the rise of the Fourth Reich. You're not a nut after all. I mean, you were right.
No, turns out that's really happening.
Yeah, it really happened. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, it's really incumbent upon us to try to learn our history because
right.
so you can figure out what's happening now.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely, absolutely. And, of course, in your book, you document how there was a lot of right-wing influence in the U.S. government, and there was a flyover, I believe it was in 1952, where the Nazis had flown over the United States Capitol in these UFOs as a show of force, and they forced Truman to negotiate with them, and later Eisenhower, to go into this secret space program, and since that time, of course, the rest is history.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And I think this year in particular, I think we're going to see more and more disclosures regarding that secret space program out in outer space.
Yes, I think so, too.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, In fact, I'm always having people ask me, you know, will we ever know the truth about the Kennedy assassination? And I try to explain to them that they're not asking the right question, because we already know the truth. It's there for anybody that wants to study it.
Sure.
What they're really asking is, can I turn on the television and have some government official have an official news conference and tell me, you know, what's going on?
Right.
Nah, I don't think that's going to happen. Okay?
Right.
Because no politician is going to want to get up, and whether it's on Kennedy 53 years or UFOs 70 years. Yeah, we've been lying to you for a better part of a century, but here, now we're going to shape up. We'll tell you what's really going on. No, that ain't going to happen.
Right.
But as far as the reality, the fact they're here, the fact that they're not human, the fact that they're doing all kinds of things all around the world and have all the way back through our recorded history.
That's true.
You know, it's just there for anybody who wants to look at it.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, one of the fascinating things, I had both Corey Good and Randy Kramer on my show last year and the year before, Jim, and they talked about medical devices used on the dark side of the moon for people who have cancer, and they're vibrational machines, and they actually cure cancer by adjusting a person's vibration.
By the frequencies. Well, you know, we have that right now. All you got to do is go Google Raymond Royal Rife.
Oh, yeah.
R-I-F-E. Right. And back in the 20s, he developed a frequency machine, and by the 30s, he had it perfected enough to where they had, I think, 17 cancer patients that had been termed terminal by the medical establishment. They said, we can't do anything for them, and he cured all 17.
That's amazing.
Okay?
That is amazing.
We have all this. It's just being kept from us by the people who are so rich and powerful, and they owe their power and their wealth to their control over monopolies and pharmaceuticals and energy and telecommunications. And that's why they dribble out a little to us every now and then just so they can sell some new product. You know, you hide and watch. There'll be the iPhone 12 before long. You know?
That's funny.
And it'll be a little bit better than the iPhone 10.
Right.
Instead of just a gigantic leap forward. I wished way back there somebody had quickly come up with the DVD and CD disc, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Could have saved me all that time and money collecting 45 records and then 33 records and then 8-track tapes.
Oh, how funny. How funny.
All that stuff that we no longer use.
Well, how funny. Well, I want to tell you, Jim, and my many listeners around the world, that if you can come to the conference on March 14th and 15th, I'll be bringing in a fellow named Dr. Yoshi, who's one of the world's most famous hototherapists. He's a vibrational healer, and he uses special machines that adjust people's vibration, and that can help them with almost any physical or spiritual condition. It's the same technology, I think, as employed in the Secret Space Program, and it really does help people.
Yeah, well, there are alternatives out there if they would just stop the suppression. But it's up to us. You know, you're not going to find somebody kind of come along at the top and try to change everything. We got to change it from the bottom.
Right.
And
the bottom
it's already happening. You know, Pepsi-Cola here several months ago announced that they were taking aspartame out of Diet Pepsi.
Really?
And,
fantastic.
And they said, and it was interesting because they didn't try to come out and say, we decided this. They were honest. They said they did this because of public demand. Public said they didn't want any more aspartame. And God, they shouldn't. That's really a poison. And it was not doing anybody any good.
Well,
so Pepsi's already taken it out of their diet drinks. Okay,
that's great.
So see, that shows that if you get enough people educated and they understand about something and they demand that something be done about it, it can be done under a system where that's responsive. Like corporatism, okay? So we're being run by the corporation.
Right.
But at least the corporations will listen if enough people say we want this or we don't want that.
That's true.
Okay? As opposed to bureaucracy under some socialist system where you got some bureaucrat who's only concerned with keeping his government employment and retirement. And you come to him and say, we don't want this or that, and he says, who cares?
Well, I have to tell you, that's a really good point, Jim. One of the things I wanted to tell you for my friends in Europe, if you buy a can of Coke or a bottle of Coke, for example, look at the ingredients very carefully, because Coke in the United States is usually made with high fructose corn syrup. And because corn is genetically modified here in the United States, it's got carcinogens in it, thanks to Monsanto, and you've got Roundup and all this other garbage in it.
Right.
But when you go to Europe, let's say you buy a can of Coke in Norway, Denmark, or Germany, it's just pure cane sugar.
Same thing in Mexico. You get cane sugar. In fact, here in Texas, if you look hard enough, you can still find Coca-Cola that's been imported from Mexico, and it's got cane sugar in it instead of corn syrup.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a whole lot better for you. I mean, you know, too much sugar is bad for everybody and anybody, but a little bit of sugar, especially if it's cane sugar, you know, that's fairly natural, and that's not so bad for you.
Right, exactly. Jim, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left, and for those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr. And I'm having a wonderful discussion with Jim Marrs, a fascinating author. Jim, I wanted to tell you we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left, and I wanted to give you the time to talk about any subject you like to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Okay, well, of course, you can get any of my books or DVDs at my website, jimmarrs.com, JimMarrs.com, or any bookstore. If they don't have it on the shelf, they can get it within a day or so, or Amazon, and they're really blowing and going now. On Amazon, I think you can order a book, probably get it in a day or so too, about as quick as the bookstore. So
wonderful.
There's all kinds of ways of doing that, but Ted, tell them about the conference in Washington.
I will. It's called the Galactic Wisdom Conference, and Jim, you'll be one of my speakers there. And Jim, I want you to send up as many books as you'd like. I'd be happy to sell them for you.
Okay.
Because people are interested in you. You don't have very many books you've written. You probably got 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, something like that. But
yeah. Well, obviously, I can't send all of them, but yeah. And I'll tell you, I think I'm going to be preparing a whole new little talk here, and what I'm going to do is going to be real fascinating, and I think your audience is going to really love it.
Wonderful.
And to try to see if I can tie the subject of the ancient astronauts or ancient aliens to find out, if they were here all those thousands of years ago, did they either leave, or are they, some of them still here?
Sure.
And to answer that question, I'm going to answer that question, and then the answer is going to be, I think some of them are still here. And if that's the point, then who are they and what do they want? And I'm going to answer that question. So.
Excellent. Yeah. You know, some of the programs that I listen to on the air, Jim, they always leave a lot of doubt as to whether there's actually extraterrestrial life out there. Well, I've been in contact with them now for the last couple of years, and I've seen the craft, and I know that you know that they're out there. So I think it's good for us to move beyond that and try to get as much information about who they are and what they want. And some of them, I think, are good and benevolent, and some of them aren't benevolent.
That's true.
But the ones who are benevolent, I think they're here to help us, and they want us to help us on our evolutionary path.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Ted. Mm-hmm. That's why, even all the way back to the late 90s, when I published my book on UFOs, which I'm told now is the top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs and their occupants in the world.
Wonderful.
Because it's been translated into more than a dozen languages. But that's why the title was The Alien Agenda.
All right.
Okay,
right.
What is the alien agenda? That's what we're still grappling with today.
Right.
Back then, most people were still grappling with the question of, do they even exist?
Right. Well, I guarantee, friends, I think my friends will be back this year again. Last year, we saw a spacecraft from my Galactic Alliance friends, not only at night, but also during the day as well, and I've got pictures of them, too.
Well, that's great. Hey, send them word that I've been counting for them now for a number of years. I certainly like to be able to see one once.
All right. Well, maybe I can arrange a meeting, Jim. I'm sure that they'd love to meet you. They'd love to meet
there you.
So. Well, Jim, thank you so
much. I come in peace.
Okay, I know that. Jim will be speaking on Sunday, March 12th in the afternoon, and I sure hope you can come down and listen to his wonderful presentation. Jim, have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.